Did you know we have completely ad-free early access to all of our episodes? Well, we do. Not only that, but we have dozens of bonus episodes waiting for you. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod, and you can check it out for 7 days absolutely free. That's patreon.com/ghosttownpod. A Homer Away From Home. I'm Jason Horton.
I'm Rebecca Lieb.
And this is Ghost Town.
At first glance, the two-story, dirt-colored stucco house in Henderson, Nevada, looks like any other house in the South Valley Ranch community. It's neutral, one of the many in an array of desert-like suburban homes with two bay windows and a low-key rock garden adorning the path to the front door. But if you look closely, you'll see the house is not quite like its neighbors in the sprawling Nevada subdivision. It has a chimney for an imaginary fireplace. In places where the paint is chipping, a bright, almost neon orange color is revealed underneath, the house's original color. You guessed correctly, the house at 712 Red Bark Lane isn't an ordinary house. It is a life-size model of the Simpsons family home, a defictionalized adobe you can live in, from the hit TV series The Simpsons. So why is this house here? Who lives in it? And who the hell built it? Today on Ghost Town, the history of Springfield's, Nevada's own, Simpsons House. As you might have guessed, it all begins with a little animated sitcom on Fox called The Simpsons. The show, created by Matt Groening, is a skewed, often absurd, satirical depiction of American life in Springfield, centered around the Simpsons family, which is comprised of Homer, Marge, Bart, Lisa, and Maggie. First conceived of as an animated short sketch for the Tracy Ullman Show in the late 90s, the concept was developed into a half-hour primetime show and picked up after the Tracy Ullman sketches became a hit. Since its debut on December 17, 1989, the show has aired nearly 800 episodes, with The Simpsons becoming Fox's first series to land in the top 30 ratings in its first season. It's also, and probably more impressive, the longest-running American animated series, the longest-running American sitcom, and the longest-running American scripted primetime television series in television history, both in seasons and individual episodes. It truly made the Fox network what it is, and continues to bring in a profit. And of course, is a part of the American zeitgeist to this day. But in 1997, the show's future was a little less certain. Sales of tie-in Simpsons merchandise had fallen from its high in the early 90s, where it had raked in roughly $2 billion during a huge jump in popularity. With revenue now dwindling, so did licensing interest, so the number of companies making Simpsons merchandise dropped by 75%. In an attempt to revitalize the consumerism around the show, product merchandisers for the show planned a major rollout for a CD-ROM game called Virtual Springfield that would allow users to explore the family's hometown and interact with its series characters. But the marketing team wanted something more to drive people both to the game and the show. That idea came not from within Fox, but from an outside marketing expert who saw an opportunity for some corporate synergy. Enter Jeff Charney. Charney was a marketing manager at Kaufman & Broad, a home building company looking to promote both its brand and a new housing development it was constructing in Henderson, Nevada. Kaufman & Broad gained a reputation as a creative place that could go a bit rogue in its marketing initiatives. In the 1970s, the company had built a whole house on top of Au Printemps, a giant department store in Paris, with the idea that it would intrigue shoppers into visiting the store's upper floors. And it worked. The house on the department store attracted more than 500,000 visitors in the 4 months that it was open, and cemented the building company's reputation as being a bit stunty and willing to take the risks. According to a Mental Floss piece about the house, While brainstorming in the shower, Charney got the idea to make a replica of the Simpsons' home. He brought it to Kaufman and Broad's builders, they pitched it to Fox, and Fox gave their approval to proceed. Quote, "It was a big deal for Kaufman and Broad because it meant all kinds of exposure," said Kaufman and Broad's project manager Mike Woodley. "The house itself was a pretty simple box-on-box design with a garage. I think I sketched it out in a day." Once the project was approved, the team poured over 100 episodes of the show and storyboards on loan from the production itself. The team's goal was to be 90% a normal house, 10% different to accommodate the cartoon nature of the characters that theoretically lived inside. Door frames were widened and lengthened to accommodate Marge's hair and Homer's girth. The stairs leading to the second floor were steeper than normal. The downstairs floor was poured and painted concrete rather than hardwood or carpet, so the architecture could mimic the show's flat colors. In the backyard, there was even Bart's treehouse, looking just like it did for all of those Treehouse of Horrors episodes. And construction was only part of the process. To get that cartoon lived-in look, a Hollywood production designer and photographer named Rick Boyd came in and accentuated the details from the show. Details superfans would recognize and absolutely appreciate. Floyd hung corncob pattern curtains in the kitchen. Bart's bedroom closet held a row of identical shirts and shorts. Mouse holes were painted on the walls near the floor. Even Lisa's saxophone leaned against her bed. They also found a vehicle and painted it purple to go with the house and the Simpsons' whole vibe. After 4 months of work, yes, only 4 months, the house neared completion in August of 1997. By this point, Kaufman and Broad were hyping the house up, arranging tours for locals and tourists hoping to catch a glimpse of the interior. Lines with wait times of more than 2 hours twisted around the block, and visitors were expected to wear surgical-style booties to avoid tracking dirt in from outside. Even Matt Groening himself came out for an appearance and spray-painted some Bart graffiti on the garage before signing his name in the front path cement. It was social media-worthy to be sure, before even the advent of social media. So what was it all for? Well, it was to make money, to draw publicity, but really the purpose was promoting a sweepstakes being advertised via Pepsi products, and that was again both for the game show and for the show itself. According to Mental Floss, buying mug root beer, brisk iced tea, or slice would net consumers a specifically numbered game piece. If it matched the one that broadcast during the fall 1997 premiere of the show, the winner would actually win the replica home, which was valued at $150,000, or, instead of the house, they could take a cash prize of $75,000. A backup plan, in case someone wasn't watching, or, you know, someone wasn't obsessively collecting soda box sweepstakes numbers in hopes of winning a Simpsons house, more proactive consumers could also fill out raffle forms and submit them via mail, which would go into the running for the house. On September 21st, 1997, those in possession of the game piece watched The City of New York versus Homer Simpson, an episode that was notably later pulled from syndication for a brief period after the September 11th, 2001 terrorist attacks. During the broadcast, at that time, however, the winning number was flashed on screen. Number 9786065. And nothing happened. Nobody came forward to claim the prize. So Fox and Kaufman and Broad went to their backup plan. Choose at random one of the raffle forms that consumers could also submit via mail. In December 1997, it was announced that a form was chosen. It belonged to Barbara Howard, a 63-year-old retired factory worker from Richmond, Kentucky. She lived in an area so rural that Fox's dispatched limo couldn't get down the dirt road to her home to get her. However she got transported to the airport that day, the network flew Howard to Las Vegas, her first time on a plane, with her two daughters and grandson. She gambled a little at the casinos and posed for photos with a ceremonial giant key to her new home just 16 miles away from the Strip. She wasn't super forthcoming with the press, saying she was still trying to process all of her good fortune. But that December, with the adrenaline of winning wearing off, Howard came to a decision. She didn't want the house after all. More after this break.
A Homer Away from Home. I'm Jason Horton.
I'm Rebecca Lieb.
And this is Ghost Town. Hi, hello, how are you?
Hello. Hello, hello.
How's it going out there?
How goes it? How goes
We're checking
it?
In. We're checking in, like it or not.
Yeah, and you don't. And you don't.
But mm-hmm. We're doing it anyway.
This is how it is.
Anyway, we want to say hello to anyone who's listening, supporting us, spreading the good word of Ghost Town. Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
We do.
And our government just keeping head above water. We're just paying taxes to that government. And we're just trusting that they're, you know, utilizing the funds mm-hmm. in a way that benefits the people.
Yeah, there are benevolent lawmakers, and we put full access to everything we are and what we do in their hands. No pressure to them, but we trust them.
And our mayors. They also once had homes that were modeled after homes of popular television shows.
Wow, this is so convenient.
Yeah. Wasn't a huge success, though, unfortunately, these homes. They weren't able to really benefit from them in any way culturally or financially. That's why they're here.
Fair.
Working for us.
Yeah. New chapter in their lives.
This first governor, I don't know what the hell he was thinking. He was like, oh, I'm going to make the Suits house from the TV show Suits.
Do they have a home? Is it a place they put their suits?
It's a condo. It's like a kind of condo-y thing.
Oh, like a 3BR condo?
Yeah, a lot of marble top.
Mm.
Closets with perfect, like nice suits in mm-hmm. there. Plenty of places to do a little cocaine off of. Listen, you gotta
get it on
those
the
deals. Now, you're wondering, Jason, it sounds like you have no idea what the TV show Suits is about. You just keep saying the word Suits.
How dare you?
That's very true. And that probably was part of the problem for Chris Hernandez.
Hello.
This next mayor's learn any lessons from the Suits house. They went up and made the Burn Notice house.
Even less now. How could I have even less knowledge from the last thing you referenced to now?
The Burn Notice house is just, you know what it is? There's a lot of laptops with files, maybe some tech stuff.
God. What format do the burn notices come in? Email?
I don't know what a burn notice actually is.
Is it about? I thought it was about firemen.
No. I think it's about. No, I don't think it's about, but that makes a lot of sense, but it's not. I think they have a paper shredder, industrial strength paper shredder. So Marissa Rothermel did not learn her lesson.
Hello.
That one.
Oof.
Yeah, not great. This next mayor's, what were you thinking? The Ned and Stacy house? What the heck? Who wants to see that? Who wants to see the Ned and Stacy house? It's a Midwestern, normal, everyday neighborhood house, maybe?
At least one bedroom.
At least one bedroom, a bedroom for the kids? Maybe? Is there a garage? Does stuff happen in the garage?
Oh, my God.
Let me tell you, who did not think that through at all. Seemed like a great idea to sign the papers. This is Kelly Meehan.
Hello.
Oh, boy. This next mayor's also didn't learn anything from anyone. Picked up the Rizzoli and Isles house. All right, here's what you got there. You got police files, because I think they're police people.
They're definitely not having sex with each other. They're two separate people.
The reason I know that is because I auditioned for this show. And so it is, I think there's a cop show. So there's like handcuffs, like, you know what I mean? Like kind of like the, like their gun holsters there, mm-hmm. kind of like a leftover Chinese food because they're too busy working so hard.
Yeah, yeah. Coffee machine in the corner.
And Rizzoli and Isles both live in the same house in this scenario.
They do. It's an intense environment.
Yeah.
For crime solving.
I mean, they're just slamming down files all over the place, and like, and the papers get sprawled out, kind of with the photos.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
a lot of that. They bring their work home with them.
Yeah. I mean, they don't go anywhere, really.
No. I mean, unless the police captain's up their butt.
Yeah. That's like, all right, to the crime scene.
And guess what? That really can't be conveyed in a house. Cat Joselle.
Hello.
So you might be noticing a theme, and they thought, well, hey, listen, this hopefully will work for other people to work for me. Guess what? It didn't work. The Franklin and Bash house? Some 2012 partners law? Or police? Or some kind of thing?
They have jobs. I know they have jobs in the show.
One of them is a certain way. And mm-hmm. the other one is a different way. So mm-hmm. we might have like mm-hmm. a mixture of like the odd couple. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking like half the house is clean, half the house is dirty.
Henshin.
More files?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. More files. More suit coats, I would imagine.
The Franklin vibe is like Franklin. But the Bash side is like, some Bash, Dad. How do we work? How do we live together in this house? And how is it conveyed in a way where maybe it'll make some money? It doesn't. Ashley Mattson, and our governor.
Mm.
Now, you've never heard our governor in a house.
Mm-mm.
So it's like, what house would they have?
Mm.
Well, they did have one, and it was absolutely ingenious. It's the house.
From House?
From House. And they're like, listen, we said it was a house, and it's house themed. Give me your money, and you can take a tour of this house. There's what's there? Files.
House is a doctor for sure.
Yeah, he's a doctor. In a good mood? Don't think so.
Hell no. Hell no.
I know that much. I do know that culturally. And I'll tell you something. I haven't watched any of the shows that we've mentioned, I have not watched. But I love to reference.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a commentary. I'm sure they're all wonderful shows.
Yeah, that's why they lasted so long.
Yeah. I mean, House did.
House did. But every...
And I feel like Suits has a reboot, I think.
Suits has a new life post Meghan Markle, like Netflix streaming.
Got it. Yeah.
But the rest of them, I don't want to be a hater, but...
Yeah. Well, never is in it because always in a private jet, mm-hmm. but hanging out in the house is our governor,
Avian Noble.
If you want no ads, no chit chat, bonus episode 7 days free, head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod. Now, I don't think I mentioned this, but I saw this mayor and I did not see most of my family. Let's put it this way.
That's
literally
where our priorities lie.
Yes. I saw Kelly Meehan and her husband. I'm assuming husband. And I don't know why I think that's husband, but I don't want to say it's like, oh, it's not. It's her husband. I'm going to say husband. It's her husband. And I've met him before.
Did you introduce him as
no
anybody?
You know,
okay.
Yes, but you know me. I'm thinking about, I did a stand-up show.
Yeah, your head's in a different place.
Cool enough to come out. I mm-hmm. will say one little tidbit about this time. So it's a show called Don't Tell. And the Don't Tell show is like, you don't know where the show's going to be until like that day. And you don't know who's going to be performing until that day. But more importantly, it's BYOB, right?
Mm-hmm.
Great. Bring your own stuff. And Kelly, you know, sat up in front, which I appreciate because no one wants to sit in the front.
Nobody.
Sat up in front. Even though it was like full. I mean, there was, you know, it was totally full. Those shows are totally full. And had a little cooler of drinks.
Hell yeah.
You know, like now, I'm telling one of my last jokes and I'm about to hit like the point of it. I mean, like a punchline. It's a little bit of a story, but I'm about to... It's a slow burn, and I'm about to get there, and all you hear is,
yeah,
fumbling through the cooler and cracking open a cold one right as I'm about to do it. And I'm set, because I'm trying to do like a 30-minute show, right? So I'm taking these stories, and I'm kind of like stretching mm-hmm. them out, dragging them out. And then as I'm like painstakingly get there, and it is painful, I know. And then as soon as I'm about to do it, is just cracks open a cold one.
Fuck
which
yeah.
I actually appreciated because it actually extended the whole set a little bit longer because I actually needed more time. So I got to comment on that.
But I appreciate coming out.
I'm so jealous that I wasn't sitting next to Kelly Meehan, also a drink in hand from a cooler.
Oh, yeah.
Front row.
Front row.
MVP. Yeah. I'm very jealous.
Yeah. So we have got a couple of more mayors and governors to meet up with, and we got the whole collection.
Mm, I love it.
Well, on that note of collecting people, you want to get back into the episode?
It was December 1997, and Simpsons sweepstakes winner Barbara Howard decided, ultimately, to take the cash reward instead of the Simpsons house, constructed in painstaking likeness of the Simpsons house on the animated show. Howard gladly accepted the $75,000, which some people thought was very stupid in terms of value. Howard lived on an ostrich and tobacco farm in rural Kentucky with her husband and was perfectly comfortable there and really had no motivation to capitalize on a random prize across the country, no matter how grandiose. Quote, "I don't think she was blown away by it as her daughters were," one of the Kaufman and Broad project managers recalls. "I think she felt a little overwhelmed. There were all these photographers and writers. She was just a simple country homemaker." That left the fate of the house to Kaufman and Broad. Having sold over 100 homes in the development, which was eventually renamed Spring Valley Ranch from Springfield Spring Valley Ranch, the property had already served its purpose. So, now what? Groening floated the idea of blowing the house up on live television, which, to Fox, felt dangerous. Broad and Kaufman agreed, and soon the house was repainted in muted colors to appease the homeowners association and sat vacant with 24-hour security so it wouldn't get vandalized or looted. By 1999, the guards' attention had waned, and people had managed to sneak in and take several of the Simpsons-specific design elements, including the Simpsons family, quote, photos that were pried off the wall, and Snowball 2's cat food dish. Kaufman and Broad considered tearing the house down or retrofitting it to conform to the neighborhood and attract conventional buyers, but that would be work. The most cost-effective thing to do, they thought, with the now outdated marketing ploy, was to just sell it, even at a loss. One day in 2001, Danielle, a secretary at Kaufman and Broad, was browsing the company's inventory when she came across the house. The price was right, and she was in the market for a larger home for her family. Quote, "I asked how much, they told me, and so I bought it," she says, "as is." With her husband and two boys, Danielle became the first and only occupant of the Simpsons house. While the outside had been repainted, the interior was a dizzying palette of primary Fox Animation-style colors. Quote, "They had put in flooring, but the paint was original, so no two touching walls were the same color," she said. The master bedroom had this lavender ceiling, pink molding, and four different colored walls. It was like being in a Crayola box. Danielle, who did not use her name in the Mental Floss article where this information came from, prefers to remain somewhat anonymous for reasons that will shortly become clear. She repainted the walls, replaced carpeting, and repaired missing chunks of drywall where looters had pried off portraits. But the home's makeover didn't quite deter superfans. Along with copious amounts of mail addressed to the Simpsons family, people will try to enter the house all the time, or sightsee outside, she said. Once, a group of drunken college kids were banging on the door, yelling to be let in. Quote, "We'll be sitting watching a movie, and someone will be yanking at the door," she said. "We're vigilant about keeping those doors locked." For now, Danielle says she's very happy in the neighborhood and only occasionally bothered by fans. But life doesn't imitate art, it appears, as Danielle has, ironically, never been a big fan of The Simpsons and still isn't, despite living in a house that for 30 years fully embodied the record-breaking TV show, for better and perhaps for worse.
Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown score second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-ALL for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.